Gettysburg Seminary presents the Seminary Explores podcast. Conversations on faith, art, people, politics, theology, life, and more. With voices from around the corner and around the globe.
Welcome everyone to the Seminary Explores podcast. I'm Kristen Johnston-Largen, and I'm very delighted to have with me today Mark Mummert. Mark, it's great to have you with us.
Hello. Glad to be here.
Mark is serving as our distinguished visiting cantor this fall when Steve Folkemer has been on sabbatical. And Mark, you've just been such a delight. You've just integrated yourself well into the community, as evidenced by the fact that the Luther statue was dressed up as you for Luther Bowl.
Thank you. I was very humbled by that.
Well, we were fortunate enough here at the seminary to have Mark do a presentation last week over lunch on ELW, and we had some people say, oh, it'd be nice if we could hear that also, and so I thought, a podcast. So that's what our topic is today. We're going to talk about ELW, and Mark, I thought a way to lead into that would be talking about how you got involved and kind of what the process was that brought it to fruition.
I participated in the 2000 to 2005 Renewing Worship Project as a member of the liturgical music subgroup, and then when we started composing things for the hymnal, because I was composing things I had to pull out from that, but I ended up being consulted upon in the editorial process of the things that I had prepared. I prepared harmonizations of the hymns throughout, and sort of just in general was around as people were culling through the resources that were being tested, and then finally in the last stages between 2005-2006, watching with great interest what was happening to all of the music that occurs in evangelical Lutheran worship, but not just the music, but also all of the rites.
What prompted a new worship book at this time, Mark?
Well, if you look at the history, in 1958, the service book and hymnal was serving our predecessor bodies, and then in 1978, a Lutheran Book of Worship is published and has begun to be used. So it seems like every generation, a hymnal and a book of worship surfaces. There was great conversation early on in 98 about whether the church should wisely go into another book, or even whether we should go into a book as an ecumenical project, because there was some discernment that we had shared a lot of worship things across denominations, and maybe it would be a better use of resources to do something like that across denominations, or because things are so delivered electronically today,
right.
And even in 98, so much has changed since then.
Sure.
There was even a question about whether a book would be useful. But it finally did come down to a conversation about a contents of the book representing the treasures we hold in common. And a stewardship of the treasures we hold in common.
Nice.
Not that everything that every congregation needs would be inside the volume, but that evangelical Lutheran worship stood for these things that we all share, and then how what we see in this collection informs what else we might use in our worship.
Oh, that's great.
A way in which evangelical Lutheran worship is different than the Lutheran Book of Worship in 1978 is that the 2006 book is not really even called a book. It's called Evangelical Lutheran Worship, and book is not in the title because it's consciously not really only a book. It's really Evangelical Lutheran Worship is a window on which to see all of the resources of the church.
Oh, that's lovely.
In worship, and is not a it's a core collection, not a composite collection.
Yeah.
So In 1978, when LBW came out, there was an expectation that all congregations would learn probably two of the three settings in the book. We would all have a common sort of musical vocabulary that way, that all of the hymns that any congregation would need would be inside the covers of that book.
Mm-hmm.
ELW is exactly opposite of that. It says we have 10 settings in the book, but not because we expect that every congregation sings 10 settings, but the 10 settings represent the great diversity of musical expression present in our church, and that some of us sing what we do on Sunday and festivals in different ways, and that's good and right and wonderful. And that also implies that we could do it perhaps 10 other musical ways that are not included in the volume.
Yeah.
Or that the hymn selection in the book implies that, wow, there's a great diversity of global song here. There's right. some really fine contributions from the pop contemporary repertoire, mm-hmm. and the grand tradition is intact in the book, which seems to imply, I think, that our hymnody is broader, deeper, wider than we ever really imagined it could possibly be.
Yeah.
And that there shouldn't be anything to prevent someone from discerning whether a hymn outside the covers of evangelical Lutheran worship would be useful in Lutheran worship.
Yeah.
The same discernment about what do we sing
would
apply then to anything outside the covers. But it means that people who are in leadership in congregations and making worship decisions have to contextualize the book. They have to know their people and then make really wise pastoral decisions about how they will use the book in their local context.
But I want to say I love this image of ELW as a window, right? I think that's really great because, like you said, it reminds us that there's more, opens us up to more, but the book is still important. You know, I think that we, I know congregations certainly in this area who are jumping to this from the service book and hymnal.
Correct.
And there is still something about sharing a book that really does physically represent this new breadth, who we are as a church today in the 21st century. And I like that you said it's clear that this is not supposed to be exhaustive, but it also is. And it stands and does say we have come to a new place as church, and this is a new vision of who we are together.
Without question, I agree.
Yeah. So, well, you talked about a couple different things that are different, which were just so fascinating. And one of them, you had this distinction when you go through a liturgy, do you do it by the book, by the rubric, or by the sense?
Right.
So talk a little bit about that.
Well, as you page through the rites in ELW, you will notice a radical change in the way the rubrics are written. In Lutheran Book of Worship, if you look at the Holy Communion service, for instance, you'll notice that on the left-hand margin are numbers for the rubrics. The rubrics were numbered, and the numbers sort of implied that what a liturgy is that you sort of walk through the rite by the number.
Right.
And if you skip a number, you do that with a certain amount of caution or care.
Okay.
There are no such numbers in ELW, and in fact, they wrote rubrics, they even came up with a term for it, soft rubrics, that were more descriptive of the event and permissive of a wider range of possibilities. So, for instance, you will see often in the book where there is such permission for things, for instance, the presider greets the assembly with these or other similar words.
Mm-hmm.
And that soft rubric invites the presider or the worship planners to consider, okay, if we're not going to say these specific words, what dynamic equivalent might we come up with for our context that would be a way for the presider to say that? So that liturgy is not a script, but it's a communal event enacted and received and informed by the great history of the church, but not stuck in unbreakable cast somehow. So when I think about planning worship, knowing an assembly and the people that are gathering to do that worship, I look at the rubrics I take seriously, and I could make a decision to do the right pretty much by the book. Mm-hmm. And I have a couple colleagues who say, you know, in the first 10 years of using ELW, it may be the right thing for a congregation mm-hmm. to just simply do it by
sure.
the book.
Sure.
Don't mess with it. Do what the book says. And then once you get comfortable with that, then take the rubrics seriously and say, now how might we tweak these rubrics to do them by the rubric? That is, not by the book, but by the rubric that invites you into the permissive character of tweaking them a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then there is even the larger sense that one reads through the rite, knows what's happening in the rite organically, in your bones, knowing what's going on in the rite, and then saying, okay, here's my people, here's this time of year, here's what's going on in the world. How do we create a dynamic equivalent to what is going on in the rite and do it by the sense of the rite?
Okay.
And I think that is the next burning horizon for us. Now, it's not that we just willy-nilly go out and write liturgies
right.
With our imagination unfettered. It's that you really do get a sense that this is what the rite is doing, that as a worship leader, I have a responsibility to the Church Catholic to do this right in its conversation with, well, we share these rights with other people, so these are rights we have in common. But how can what we do look like a common right, but still look like our people here?
Yeah.
So I think that. How we do the book, not the book, how we do ELW contextually is a really big issue for us.
Yeah. Well, you raised a point there that I want to follow up on a little bit, and you talked about in some ways the tension, but good tension to have between it being a Lutheran worship resource, but then also honoring the ecumenical commitments that we have. And I wonder if you could talk about how we see that in the text, for example, some of the texts that were used.
Certainly. Yeah, it was very interesting when the book first came out in 2008, that when people opened the book and saw, for instance, the creeds or the texts of the canticles or the Lord's Prayer, for instance, that people said, well, why did you mess with my creed?
Right.
And the you meaning the ELCA or Augsburg
you
Fortress.
Personally.
You why did you mess with the creed?
Yeah.
Well, the truth is that these texts are texts we have in common with English-speaking Christians around the globe who came together in 1988 to rework the text that we had agreed upon as English-speaking Christians in the 70s mm-hmm. to use together. In the 1970s, those were the texts that were used in Lutheran Book of Worship. In 1988, that same council, the English Language Liturgical Commission, came together, and they made compromises to agree upon texts that we would have in common. In fact, a volume exists called Praying Together of the English Language Consultation from Abingdon Press, which outlines all of these texts that we sing and pray together and honors the ecumenical consensus.
Yeah.
And it's honest about the fact that there are diverse ways to translate these things, and there were some places where they had to make a compromise.
Yeah.
But it's not that a smoke-filled room in Chicago sat down and just decided we're going to sing the Magnificat in second person as opposed to third person.
Right.
You know, that this is really a much more Catholic endeavor than just a ELCA.
And that's really important, for where we are as a church today, in 2015.
That we honor that. Well, and the same thing happened with music. There were many, many decisions that happened with tunes of hymns, texts of hymns, where LBW kind of went out on its own way, making some radical changes of texts. There's some ways in which we honored the way hymns appear in our United Methodist or Episcopalian or Presbyterian hymnals because we wanted to achieve some sort of ecumenical consensus.
Sure.
So I think that's a great treasury in the book, is that it really does honor that more and more.
Yeah.
So
Yeah. Well, why don't you say, you're talking about the hymns, why don't you say a little something about the, you had mentioned that the paper is a little better, so we have thinner paper, we can include more hymns.
Right.
And then there were some decisions made about certain hymns, certain things to include and not include.
Right. Well, we had so many hymns presented to us, and we had, of course, we went through LBW and said, what things will we bring forward? We had With One Voice and said, we have a lot of things we want to bring forward here. Already with that, we had a big pool that was our common pool. We knew that there were hymns from the volume This Far by Faith or Libro de Liturgia y Cantico that we wanted to bring in. And there were so many new hymns that were on the horizon that we really felt that we knew that we were going to need a volume that included many, many more hymns than we had in Lutheran Book of Worship.
Yeah.
But we were committed to not making it in size larger in dimension than Lutheran Book of Worship so that congregations didn't have to undo their pew racks. There were these practical concerns. But because paper was able to be made thinner and stronger, we were able to get more pages in the book. But the other significant difference musically that really surprised many people is that a third of the melodies in the book are given in only melody line format and not in harmonies. Therefore, the Pew edition of Evangelical Lutheran Worship is not a book that you can kind of put on your piano rack and just play through all of the hymns, because a third of those accompaniments are not there. And that was really hard for some people to understand. Also, people who love to sing in harmony felt that that was a loss. But on the editorial side of that, we felt like we made some wise decisions about the third of the hymns that are in melody line format, judging which ones would be presented in such a way by whether, in fact, the hymn is most commonly sung in unison in harmony. So Gregorian chants from the plain chant tradition, you would not harmonize on those. Actually, pop contemporary tunes, you sing the melody, and if you harmonize, you make it up. You don't read a harmony from a book on pop contemporary material. The earliest German chorales would have been sung in unison. So A Mighty Fortress, in its rigorous form at hymn 503, is printed in unison because you wouldn't want to actually saddle the congregation with singing in unison on something that was driven rhythmically as opposed to harmonically.
Oh, okay.
So we made those decisions intentionally. The other thing, we did have some data related to this that said that people who do not read the musical notation are sometimes overwhelmed by all of the notes on the page that create accompaniments. So some people are really helped by just having the melody notes with the words. And they are really helped by having both the melody notes and the words together so that they get a sense about the syllabification, the length of the word, the duration of the word or syllable, and the way the notes go up and down on the page. And if all you see is the way the melody notes go up and down, you can make some relationship to that, even if you don't know that it's a fourth or a fifth or a sixth. So I really feel that you know, we made some compromises on the way, but I think we made good compromises.
Yeah.
The other thing I will say is that the two-thirds of the hymns that have harmonies in the book, we said if they appear in harmony, that it would be a singable harmony and not just a harmonization that was fancy that could be played on a keyboard.
Oh.
So that's the way the book differs. That's the way Evangelical Lutheran Worship differs greatly from LBW. LBW, the accompaniments may or may not have been ones that you would want to sing in harmony. For instance, look at God Whose Almighty Word in Lutheran Book of Worship.
Yeah.
I dare you, any of you, to sing that harmony. But so we actually commissioned new harmonies for ELW that would be able to be sung in harmony. So the principle, it's to a greater or lesser degree of success, but nonetheless, the principle in the book is if it's printed in harmony, it is possible to sing it in harmony.
Okay, nice. Now, I just have to ask you, and I don't know how much of this you're privy to, but I have this, like, vision, you know, with sort of like the funk group, the new Jesus. Like, you know, everybody's got a ball in their hand. Okay, here's hymn number 556. Morning is broken. You know, a red ball if it's in, a black ball if you don't want it. I mean, how did that actually work? I mean, I just can't imagine.
Well, there was a serious survey that was done of many, many people who were asked to rate hymns and to say, this is absolutely must occur.
Yeah.
This is sort of expendable. This we can do without.
Absolutely. Get rid of this one.
Do not put this in. And so we called that data, and
okay.
From that data, we made decisions.
Okay.
Now, I can say that I know of some choices that were made really at the very, very last minute, hymns that were on the cutting room floor that truly by the data we said we wouldn't include, but because of the way the layout of the book worked and there was a corner of the page that was available, we were able to insert some things. I'm not going to say specifically some of those because I went to the mat on a few. That were on the cutting room floor. And some of them, plain and simple, were hymns that were in Lutheran Book of Worship that just sort of went under the radar, that perhaps were in a different section of Lutheran Book of Worship and weren't noticed or didn't show up on worship recommendation sheets, so that they didn't get known. And some of us regarded them to be treasures and didn't really want to completely lose them.
Yeah.
So it was very difficult.
Oh, and I can't even imagine, really.
But even in the end, you know, I talk to my ecumenical friends, and we are the envy of the other denominations.
Really?
Now, the Presbyterians have come out with Glory to God, and that is quite a fine new collection.
Mm-hmm.
Very much informed by the contents of Evangelical Worship.
Really?
Okay.
Interesting.
But the Episcopalians are salivating. I hope I'm not offending any Episcopalians, but they are salivating over this book. In fact, Evangelical Lutheran Worship is an approved book of worship of the Anglican Church in Canada and the Anglican Church of Scotland.
Yeah.
And I think that says a lot about its ecumenical character, its Catholic sense, its honesty about the breadth and depth of the church. I think it really is a great thing.
That's lovely. Well, one of the other things I want to make sure that we talk about is the Psalter. I'm a bad Christian because I don't carry around a Bible, but I carry around my little ELW, and one of the reasons why I do it is because it's got the whole Psalter in there, and I just love that.
Right. Well, you know, in Lutheran Book of Worship, I think because of space, they opted to only include the Psalms that were appointed in the Sunday lectionary.
Mm-hmm.
So ELW made a conscious decision to include all 150, which I think is brilliant.
I do too.
I also think that the numbering system in the book, which is hotly contested around, is also brilliant, and it makes that the first 150 songs in the collection are the first 150 psalms, and the 150 psalms, not the first, but the 150 psalms.
Yes.
And, you know, I always say to folks, if you really want to know where the psalms start in the pew edition, all you have to do is turn the hymnal on its side and look at the, not on the other side from the spine, look at the white pages, and you'll see red tabs going down the front of the material. The red tabs indicate the liturgical materials in the front of the book, but where the red tabs end is where the psalms begin.
Oh.
And I think if you explain that to folks in a congregation, they'll go, oh, okay.
I can do that.
And truthfully, they're kind of in the middle of the book where they are in the Bible.
Yeah.
So they're all pointed there for singing. I think it's really important to say that the text of the Psalter was worked on by a great committee of Hebrew scholars, liturgical scholars, and it was a emendation of the Book of Common Prayer Psalter, which had at its heart not a psalm translation for study, but a psalm translation for singing.
Yeah.
And there were decisions about how to do that as inclusively and expansively as possible.
Yeah.
And I also think it is the envy of our ecumenical brothers and sisters who really are looking for a Psalter that does what our Psalter does. So I'm very proud of the Psalter.
Yeah.
In fact, I worked then 2 years after ELW to work on a grand collection of music that would enable us to sing the Psalms in diverse ways.
The chant tones?
No, I I prepared a 2-volume collection of psalms that are for choir and congregation, the congregation sings a refrain, and that the choir sings the body of the text in many and diverse ways.
We have been using those, and they're lovely.
Yeah, we have been using them a lot.
Are there new, just that the one-line kind of chant tones in here?
Yes, there are new tones. We expanded the new tones in ELW. We found that the Lutheran Book of Worship tones were mostly tones that went bum ba ba bum 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 ba down. Bum ba ba ba. They kind of were headed down. And we wanted a few that went ba bee 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 that allowed for questions.
Oh, nice.
Or some tones that weren't necessarily happy or sad, but some tones that's kind of found a middle way.
Yeah.
You know, because many of the psalms have these interesting shifts in the middle.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
You don't want to sing it to an overly triumphant tone,
right.
But you also don't want to sing it to a dour tone. So we wanted to create some tones that were conversant in a variety of tonal allegory, actually.
Yeah. Oh, how interesting. Yeah. Well, I love it. I think it's fabulous. And I think, frankly, I mean, I heard, this is now just hearsay, that it sold better than they expected. I mean, that it sold really well. And I, you know, there's always is going to be, you know, when you introduce a new book. But overwhelmingly, I think people like it. I feel like it's been well received.
It has been very well received. It's hard to judge its reception because there are numerous congregations who use its contents in electronic form. So it's very, very harsh.
Sure.
There are a lot of congregations who've opted not to purchase the Pew edition, but actually to use the resources from the book. So I think it's the way we measure that is different than it would have been compared to the 1978 book.
Yeah.
But what I see, even in congregations that continue to use LBW, the Green Book, that bulletins are reprinting portions of Evangelical Lutheran worship material in their worship folders.
Yeah.
Or projecting them on screens or taught right on the spot.
Sure. You know,
whatever. But I do get a sense that the materials have influenced this generation of worshipers. And I think we still have work to do in helping people to understand the breadth and depth of the collection.
Yeah, absolutely.
As we grow into it. But I'm so grateful to have been what the little I did in the project. It really is an amazing thing to watch it come to life in places.
Oh, I think so too.
When I hear the music that I composed sung in places, it really heartens me because it makes me glad for my contribution, but also just makes me aware of the many, many people who contributed to this. And it really is a churchly effort.
Yeah. And you feel like part of a greater whole.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
absolutely
right, which
no
is
question.
Lovely. Yeah. Well, I know for me, and I know for the students, it was really insightful and helpful to hear you sort of talk through some of that. And so I'm grateful that you took some time to do that on our podcast today, Mark.
Thank you very much.
It's wonderful to talk with you.
You have been listening to The Seminary Explores from Historic Seminary Ridge in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, a production of Gettysburg Seminary. We invite you to visit our website at www.ltsg.edu. Opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of Gettysburg Seminary or the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.